Okay, well, it's a pleasure to be here again. Especially for this subject, which I've been involved in for a long time. I'm going to talk about some non-abelian quantum Hall states and their properties and prospects. And this is based on some work that's, well, the recent work that it's based on is listed there, and there's also another paper to appear, and I want to thank all of my collaborators on this topic over the years. So the things I'm going to talk about, first of all, the general notions of non-abelian quantum Hall states, which could also in many ways be read as topological phases generally. I'm going to talk about this series of states that I proposed with Ed Rezai, which includes some others as special cases. Then I'm going to go on to some recent numerical results which relate to whether these states actually show up at filling factors 12/5 and 13/5. And then in the last part, in my second hour, I'm going to talk about quasi-Hall state counting. Is anybody awake? This was one of my classes. I would get everybody to move forwards. Okay. So quantum Hall states, or phases, or in what we called in our original paper, universality classes. So we're going to imagine that we have a fully gapped or incompressible quantum Hall phase, a state in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And our argument is that we should characterize these by properties of their elementary excitations or quasiparticles. And so these properties are, first of all, the quantum numbers of these elementary excitations, such as the charge. So we can label these distinct possibilities by some abstract index, little a equals 1, or a or b equals 1 or 2, 1 or 2 or 3, so on. And then, in addition to the quantum numbers, we can also characterize them by statistics of excitations as we drag these around each other to exchange them adiabatically. Remember that we have a fully gapped system, so this makes sense. And then we also have the idea of fusion of excitations, that two excitations are brought close together, or even if they're not particularly close together, but just observed from a large distance away, can be viewed as equivalent to some other excitation C, labeled by C. So this is based on the locality of the underlying physics, which, if you like, is the idea that seen from a great distance such as the coast, you can't tell the difference between Oxford and Cambridge. Okay. So as we'll see, these operations, which are drawn as pictures here, are described by some operations on the states, which are some matrices, at least in the case of the braiding here. And these will have to obey some consistency conditions. For example, if we exchange A, particle type A, with this pair of types B and C, it doesn't make any difference whether we do that before or after fusing them to form a type D. And in the case of the braiding operations, these different sequences of braidings are equivalent. This is the well-known relation in the braid group. And it's important also that the set of labels that distinguish the quasiparticles form a finite set, and this is because some more general notion of quasiparticles can be identified under addition of some kind of objects which are, if you like, invisible particles. For example, in the fractional quantum Hall case, typically, there are identifications by of charges differing by integers. Okay. So then our point was that rational conformal field theory in two dimensions, that is, two-dimensional critical theory, provides a supply of consistent solutions to all of these consistency conditions using work of Moore and Zeiberg. So what we're saying here is that we have a correspondence between a quantum Hall phase and a rational conformal field theory in which a state in the quantum Hall phase with quasiparticles of types A1, A2, and so on at some positions, say Z1, Z2, and so on, corresponds to a conformal block for fields of corresponding types A1, A2, and so on at the same position, Z1, Z2, and so on. So what are conformal blocks? Conformal blocks are chiral parts of correlation functions in the two-dimensional critical field theory. So the fields in the field theory depend on Z and Z bar. And this will be equal in a large number of theories. This is equal to simply a sum of mod squares of functions that are analytic apart from typically branch cuts. And in fact, it turns out later that that the phases we want to describe for positive definite Hilbert spaces or like electrons correspond to unitary rational conformal field theories. I think I'm going to need some water. I wonder if somebody could just pour me a little cup of water. Thanks. So in terms of these conformal blocks then, the braiding operation acts as some unitary matrices in these labels alpha and beta, which I haven't really explained yet. These label distinct blocks. And to explain those, I need to get into the fusion rules. So in this critical field theory, there are operator products of these fields. When one gets close to another, it's equivalent to some other field C with some bunch of coefficients, and typically a sum over C. But in a more abstract form, we can describe these simply by the fusion rules, which tell us nothing about the coefficient C. They only tell us how many distinct times each field appears in such a product. So these multiplicities n are non-negative integers, and this is a decomposition very much analogous to the Clebsch-Gordan series for or multiplicities for decomposing, thank you, a tensor product of two spins in SU2. And so then using these numbers, which we can calculate for a given theory, we can calculate the number of blocks. If we have a bunch of fields, little n fields here, with of these types, A1 up to AN, then for each fusion, as a function of time still going upwards, we start with the trivial field, the identity labeled by 1. So we get, in the fusion, we simply get A1. And then we get the fusion of A1 and A2, which is something B2 and so on. And because of these rules, when the n's are non-zero, that tells us which labels can appear, and there may be more than one possibility, or they may occur with some multiplicities bigger than one. And so we have to sum the number of choices for these intermediate states here, b, with multiplicities, and performing that sum tells us the number of conformal blocks for that particular function. And so then we get non-abelian statistics only in the case when the number of blocks is larger than 1. Yes, corresponds to a block, yes. Okay. And then this picture, the braiding matrices can be described more completely now. We'd like to switch these types, adjacent types, AI and AI plus 1. we'd like to bring that to the form that we started with, but then we have a different intermediate state, and therefore we get a matrix between those intermediate states that depends on these external lines whose indices are fixed. So this can be calculated using a four-point function of the fields. Okay. So those are some basic properties of the phases. Now I want to describe some particular examples. And these arise from looking at a K plus one body interaction Hamiltonian for the quantum Hall effect, so restricted to the lowest Landau level, where the basis states are basically the powers of Z. And there's no kinetic energy, so all we want to look at is the interaction Hamiltonian. So for a K plus 1 body interaction with K is 1, 2, 3, and so on, any of these we can find in a wave function. We can find some wave functions that have that are zero energy eigenstates, and these are functions that vanish when K plus 1 of the coordinate Z coincide. And the state or function of the lowest degree, and I'm going to ignore these Gaussian factors for a while, the state of lowest degree can be written in this form, which is a product. Well, what I've done is instead of labeling the particles by I, I've labeled them now by a pair, but this pair of indices still refers to just one particle, and I've divided the particles, the n particles, if n is divisible by k, I can arrange them into an array which has k columns and n over k rows, and I and j, I going down the columns and j going across the rows, labels then the particles, and what happens is that we are writing factors that connect for any two rows, we have factors that connect the particles like this. So if they're in the same column, or if the one in the higher row is one column to the right, then there's a factor connecting them. And you can see then that this is forced to vanish if k plus 1 coincide, because certainly at least two of them must be in the same column. Okay. So there are some special cases of this. The k equals 1 case is just the Laughlin nu is 1 half state, and this Hamiltonian was an observation by Haldane. And for k equals 2, this is actually equivalent to the Pfaffian state of Greg Moore and myself, which is a Pfaffian of 1 over zi minus zj times a Laughlin factor product of zi minus zj, which I'm going to write as psi lj, Laughlin-Jastrow. And for k bigger than 2, these were new. So those wave functions are totally symmetric. For more general states, we can divide them, we can multiply them by the Laughlin-Jastrow factor to an additional integer power m. And then these wave functions are totally symmetric. They describe bosons if m is even, and anti-symmetric, describing fermions if m is odd. And then we can calculate the filling factor as the ratio of the number of particles over the number of flux, or the number of orbitals used by the wave function. The number of flux is just the degree of the function in each zi. And with a little calculation, you find that for these states, then, the filling factor is k over mk plus 2. And if you want m greater than or equal to 1, there are also Hamiltonians for those cases, as well as for m is 0, which was the one I wrote above. And for these Hamiltonians, or at least for the ones we studied with moderate values of k, the spectra have a gap above the ground state in finite sizes, say on the sphere, and so these do appear to be good incompressible phases of matter. Just a remark about the sphere. For the sphere, I use the similar wave function z to the m, but I replace the Gaussian by this other factor. And now m runs from 0 up to n phi. Okay. So now let's connect this back to conformal field theory. So I said earlier that there's a correspondence between quantum Hall phases and rational conformal field theory, but in fact we went a step further than that. We observed that nice trial wave functions actually are conformal blocks of the corresponding two-dimensional field theory. So when you have a nice wave function, very likely this is where it comes from. So as an example, our original example was the k equals 2 case, and in this case, the Pfaffian that I wrote is a correlation function of Majorana fermions, psi, which using Wick's theorem can be calculated from the two-point fermion-fermion correlation function 1 over z minus z prime, and another factor which contains exponentials of a massless scalar field, phi, and this produces the Laughlin factors. And in this theory, then, the operator products are written here as well, which are basically the same as the two-point function of psi. And not bother with that, but these operator products imply that this function goes to zero when any three coordinates are equal. If I put big M equal to zero. So that was some relatively simple theory. Slightly less familiar theory is involved for the general K cases, in which the Majorana Fermi field is replaced by a parafermion field, so-called SU2 level K mod U1 coset or parafermion theory. In this, there are fields or currents psi 1 up to psi K minus 1, in addition to the identity or trivial operator. And these have these operator products given here. And using these, you can show that this similar correlation function of psi 1s times an appropriate power of the Laughlin-Jastrow factor to make this into a polynomial, this has the same behavior as the Reed-Rezai state, namely when we take any k plus 1 of the coordinates to the same value, then the function goes to zero, in particular, even if big M is equal to zero. And so from this conformal field theory construction, we actually knew that these wave functions had to exist even before we'd written them down. And then knowing that they existed, we were able to write them down in agreement with the structure predicted by the conformal field theory. So now we'll turn to the excitations of these theories. So the parafermion conformal field theory has k primary fields, including the identity. And what we did is we take a correlation function of psi 1s again, corresponding to particles. But we also insert some number little n of sigma 1s. And again, we need to include either the scalar field or simply these Laughlin-Jastrow type of factors, including a fractional power in the difference of ZIs and WLs. And because of the operator product properties, this function still vanishes when any k plus 1 of the coordinates z are equal. It also vanishes when any k of the z coordinates is equal to one of the WL coordinates. And so from the first property, this is again a zero-energy wave function, and these are quasi-Hall states of the quantum Hall system. And there's a non-trivial number of conformal blocks for the case, all cases where k is bigger than 1, which we'll come back to later.
Why is it easy to write quasi-Hall wave functions?
That's the way life is. So it's because the in the wave functions you want them to vanish, and you can easily accomplish that. For the quasi-electrons, you want to pull electrons in towards the quasi-particles, which you can naturally do with some pole, but then the wave function is diverging and it's not a polynomial in the Hilbert space. So it's because the quantum Hall wave functions want to be should be polynomials. That's why things that are polynomials are okay, but in conformal field theory, not everything is a polynomial. Things can also have poles. Yeah. I don't think it should be smaller than large n. Let's come back to that later. Let's save most of the questions for the discussion also. But I'll come back to that question in a bit. Okay. Good questions, but worth saving. So here the operator product of psi 1 with sigma 1 is this fractional power, which dictated that I have to have this power, similar power, in the Laughlin or charge sector part. And this is what implies leads to the charge of the quasi hole, which is simply minus 1 over mk plus 2. So one question that's left unanswered by this analysis, which generates a lot of zero energy states, the question left unanswered is, are these all of the zero energy states? Is this a complete set of the zero energy wave functions for this Hamiltonian? Turns out they are, but it's not obvious from this analysis. Okay. Okay, so now to get further, we should look at the fusion rules. And it's easiest to describe this for the k equals 2 case. The primary fields under the Virasoro algebra are, there are just three of them, the identity field 1, the Majorana fermion psi, and sigma 1 just becomes sigma, the so-called spin field, corresponding to the spin field of the Ising model, which is the critical conformal field theory involved here. And these have these fusion rules listed here. And the last one is the most interesting one because it's the only one that has two terms, non-zero terms, on the right-hand side, 1 plus psi. And so when we do this analysis for little n sigmas in a correlation function, we find that after we've fused twice with sigma, we have either the possibility of 1 or the possibility of psi. Another sigma takes us back to sigma, but then another sigma takes us a 1 to, again, to a possibility of either 1 or psi. Finally, we have to come back to 1. So counting the number of possibilities, we find there are 2 to the n over 2 minus 1 of these conformal blocks. Actually, this analysis applies directly if we, instead of quantum Hall states, if we look at a P plus IP superconductor, a BCS paired state of spinless fermions. But that's some other direction, which I'm not going to get into here. But anyway, the same number of conformal blocks is obtained if we include the charge sector to get the Moore Reed quantum Hall states. If I turn to k bigger than 2, the answers are not so simple. They're not simply powers of some integer like this, or actually, in that case, square root of 2. They're a little more complicated. So for k equals 3, for n quasi-holes on the sphere, the fusion rules lead us in the parafermion theory, which has three non-trivial, three fields. They lead us to conformal blocks correspond to paths going along this Bertelli diagram, and the paths can either end at the top or at the bottom. And then it works out that if you count the number of these for each value of little n, you obtain the Fibonacci number f n minus 1. So some Fibonacci numbers are listed here. So this is rather connected with what people have been referring to as Fibonacci anyons, although I think this month we should start calling them Da Vinci anyons. and get more publicity. Possibly a lawsuit. Okay. So I wanted to say something about the chiral algebra, because there's still one more thing I need to explain. When the charge sector is included, I should still have only a finite number of quasiparticle types. So why is that? After all, when we look at the charge of quasiparticles, there's an infinite number of possible charges. Why can we, in fact, identify some of these with each other to end up with a finite number of things? Well, the reason is that the what I refer to as invisible particles include the underlying particles, the electrons or bosons in our quantum Hall system. And they're invisible in the sense that their braiding and fusion properties are basically trivial. So in the conformal field theory, this is represented by this field here. And in the conformal field theory, these generate the chiral algebra under operator products with themselves. And this chiral algebra is directly relevant when you analyze the edge states of the quantum Hall state. So after using this chiral algebra and identifying the fields correctly, let's look at two cases. For M is zero, the chiral algebra turns out to be SU2 current algebra at level K, and the number of primary fields for this algebra is K plus 1. And in the M is 1 case, and these cases M is 0 and M is 1 for fermions are the two cases apparently of most interest physically. In the M is 1 case for fermions, the chiral algebra is the N equals 2 superconformal algebra at level K. And the number of primaries is K plus 1, K plus 2 over 2. And then finally, this finite number of quasiparticle types determines also the number of degenerate ground states on the torus. And for general values of big M, it's given by this formula here. So some people define topological phases using the number of ground states on the torus as a starting point, but I prefer to start with the properties of braiding and fusion for the quasiparticles and get to the torus later. Okay, so for the statistics then, now the conformal blocks have some kind of branch point behavior in the W's, not simply some root, because the branch can be you come back on a different branch, you generally have a rather different function, linearly independent function in the Z's. And in conformal field theory, the braiding operations are just deduced by looking at analytic continuation of the conformal blocks in the W's as they go around each other, with, for example, the Z's held fixed. For statistics of particles in 2 plus 1 dimensions, what we need is adiabatic transport, like a Berry phase or Berry matrix. And the relevant vector potential or connection that one has to calculate for this is the overlap of one of the blocks with some given values of the quasi-particle coordinates W into overlap with d psi by dW. And this overlap has to be calculated as the integral over the Z's. So this is very different from analytically continuing the functions with the Z's held fixed. And the essential conjecture of our paper from 91 was that the exchange of quasi-particles by adiabatic transport gives the same grading properties as the analytic continuation of conformal blocks. However, although this is widely believed to be true, this has not been proven in general. It was proved, some motivation was found by us by looking at the abelian cases, and there's also a family of spin singlet states for which it can be shown directly under some assumptions. Okay, so now I'll come to some numerical work on two-body interactions to see whether these phases actually show up for realistic Hamiltonians. So first of all, for the k is 2 case, well, I suppose k is 1, as everyone knows, is the Laughlin states, and those are really do seem to be occurring in nature. Then k equals 2 for fermions with big M is 1. Well, this is now pretty well supported by numerical work on finite systems at 5 halves and 7 halves. I should say that this state was relevant for 5 halves and 7 halves was originally suggested by Greiter, Wen, and Wilczek. Also, for bosons filling factor 1, which could in principle be realized by rotating cold atoms in a trap, it again appears there. For the k is 3 case, again, for bosons, this looks quite good according to some of our recent work, especially if you include a dipolar interaction. So what I'm going to talk about is the electron case with m is 1 for 12-fifths or 13-fifths. And in our paper in 1999, we had some fairly strong indications that this phase was actually showing up for these states in the first excited Landau level. So I should explain that the lowest Landau level is assumed to be filled with electrons of both spins. And so then we're in the first excited Landau level, which is really isomorphic to the lowest Landau level. But the interaction Hamiltonian coefficients are different. So one has to use the appropriate two-body interaction Hamiltonian, which can be parameterized by the so-called pseudo-potentials Vm for odd m, which are just the values of the interaction energy for two particles with relative angular momentum m. And so what we did in the recent work was we also included finite thickness in the interaction, effect in the interaction, and we vary the values of V1 and V3 a little bit around these interaction values. And furthermore, we worked on the torus rather than the sphere, which we did in the old work. So for the torus, I should explain briefly some consequences of symmetry, translational symmetry on the torus with periodic boundary conditions. When the filling factor is P over Q and P and Q have no common factors, all the states have an exact degeneracy of Q for a translationally invariant Hamiltonian. Now, our states have this larger degeneracy, which should be, in general, this should be exact in the thermodynamic limit for some general Hamiltonian. For the trial K plus 1 body Hamiltonian, this is exact in any finite size. But in general, we won't be that fortunate, and the degeneracy should show up in the thermodynamic limit. But in view of the exact degeneracy by factors of Q for all cases, that much degeneracy will show up in finite size. If we're doing M is 0, then for K is 3, the fourfold degeneracy is made up of a factor 2 from translational symmetry because the filling factor is K over 2. And the other factor of 2 is an extra degeneracy, which is going to be split in a finite size calculation typically. For m is 1, which I'm really interested in here, actually this number becomes 10. There's a factor of 5 from translational symmetry, which is always factored out in numerical calculations. And the extra factor of 2 is what we would be looking for. And there's also a pseudo-momentum k living in some Boolean zone, which comes from this translational symmetry analysis. So I only want to show a few of the results, really. Here are some overlaps between the exact ground state for this two-body interaction with the interaction I described, and there are two low-lying states of the correct quantum numbers, and we can take the sum of the overlap squares between those and the two trial states. So that's why the total overlap could potentially be as large as 2. Rather than 1, which you may be used to. Okay. And let's see, let's focus on these open and dark blue circles here, then this, the overlap is largest at a point which is actually just right around the place where the where we simply take the n equals 1 Landau level Coulomb interaction with no with finite thickness and no other modification. It just happens that that's where the overlap is very large. Now, way over to the right, we believe when delta V, when we increase the short range part of the interaction, we go over to a hierarchy state. This is, interaction is more like the lowest Landau level. And we can use some state taken from the ground state taken from a Hamiltonian way over on the right as a trial state for the hierarchy and take the overlap of that with the wave functions occurring in the region shown here. And this overlap, which will be one way off to the right somewhere, is getting much smaller in this region. And in fact, there's a level crossing between the two ground states of the real Hamiltonian, which occurs somewhere here. That's why this drops to zero. If we take the curve, the overlap with the first excited state instead of the ground state, then we have this smooth in this region. Then we have a smooth curve here. So what happens in this region is the overlap with the hierarchy state gets very small, and the overlap with the trial states gets very large. Means Coulomb, the first Landau level with finite thickness. Yes. It's a Fang-Stern interaction. Okay. So the overlaps are large there. Here's part of the low-lying spectrum. So I referred to two states which are ground states in the same region of interaction. These states for 15 particles, these are very nearly degenerate, but there's a gap to the other states. Over to the right, one of these states goes off up into the continuum. We have a single ground state characteristic of the hierarchy phase. But in this region, we have a pair of states very nearly degenerate with a gap above them. So we're interpreting this as the as being our phase. Way over to the left, we have some kind of translational symmetry broken state, some kind of crystal. Way over to the right, we have the hierarchy phase, and our phase is occurring in the middle here. Okay. So we also have results for 18 particles, but we're not able to calculate overlaps there. Here's a spectrum which shows this degenerate doublet at k is 0. But in general, the degeneracy is not quite so good for 18. There are certain level crossings. This is plotted, energy is plotted relative to the ground state. There's a level crossing here. So this region over here to the right of about 0.01 is the hierarchy region. This appears to be our region in here. There's a couple of level crossings there, but other states are at somewhat higher energies. So this is quite consistent with our earlier results on the sphere, and also is quite similar to what was seen for the Moore-Reed state at 5 Hz, when interactions are varied. You go towards the lowest Landau level interaction parameters, you get a Fermi liquid state. Go in the other direction, you get a crystal and or stripe. And in the region in the middle, you get the incompressible paired state. I just told you several times what it is. The n equals 1 Landau level interaction with finite thickness. That's what I've just been telling you several times. The n is 1 Landau level interaction with finite thickness using a Fang-Stern potential. Okay. In some calculations, also a different potential appropriate for a quantum well was used with very similar results. Okay. All right, so okay, so finally, let me come back to the trial wave functions and analytical work. Perhaps I can answer Mike Friedman's question. Let's look in more detail at these quasi-whole trial states on the sphere. And let's focus on the case where big M is zero, and we just look at the K plus one body delta function interaction. So we have N particles and N phi flux. So we'd like to just count these states starting from scratch. So suppose we let K of the coordinates become equal to big Z1, let's say. So because the wave function vanishes when K plus 1 coincides, it doesn't have to vanish when only K coincides. So this may be a non-zero limit of our wave function as a function of big Z1 and the remaining coordinates Zi. If this limit is non-zero, we can repeat and let another K coordinates Zi become equal to each other at big Z2. If that's non-zero, then we can repeat the process. If we finally get a vanishing state wave function from one of these limits, then we can go back a step so that we've only got the previous number of clusters where, by assumption, we did have a non-vanishing function. Then these non-vanishing functions, this set of functions for different numbers of clusters, must take one of these forms. So the wave function, in terms of the clusters, capital Z, it turns out that it must have a power 2k when any two of those approach, due to the fact that when k plus 1 of the original particles are at the same place, it must vanish. It must also vanish if one of the remaining coordinates, little z, approaches a capital Z. And there's some other degeneracy that we can include to get the total degree of the function to be n phi, by including these factors containing quasi-whole coordinates, W, again, so that you can think of these as W varies, you can think of these as coherent states. And if you expand them out in powers of these Ws, then you get the linearly independent states. Okay. And finally, there must be a function in the remaining coordinate Zi, which by assumption vanishes when any k of the Zs are equal. So this has a number of what I call unclustered particles, F, the number of particles Zi left over, some reduced number of flux, because these Zis also appear here, and otherwise it's the same problem that we started with a smaller value of K, and also a smaller value of the particle number and a smaller number of flux. So this now leads to a recursive solution to this problem. So the recursion is that if we take the dimension of this space, this is the number for n, n phi, and k, we can expand out in these w's, and the, let's see, so n minus f over k is the number of these clusters, or capital Z coordinates, and so the number of linearly independent functions in the w's is this binomial coefficient written here. And then we can multiply that for each f by the number of states for the problem with k replaced by k minus 1, and so on. And so summing over f, which must be equal to n modulo k, we get this recursive relation between these numbers of states for different values of k and different numbers of particles. So then we can solve this recursion relation. We get various further binomial coefficients. So now I've labeled it a different way. M alpha is the number of clusters of size alpha. So we started with clusters of size k, but in the recursion we're going to have clusters of smaller sizes down to 1. And for each size we have a number of quasi-holes, nk equals simply little n, and then we have corresponding numbers for the remaining levels in this recursion. And it's helpful to draw this diagram. This is a partition of the n particles into rows of different sizes, and there are little n dots here. And the rule is that for each missing box, you can put two of the dots, except that in the bottom row where there are no boxes, you can have odd numbers of rows as well as even numbers of rows. Okay. And the number of dots in each column is n alpha minus 1. And then these the diagram says that these combinations, as shown here, then must be equal to a constant, which is 2n plus little n over k. And this is the condition that the wave functions have the same degree n phi in all of the coordinates zi. Okay? You can solve these for the n alphas explicitly in terms of big N, little n, and the m alphas, which are, so you just need to label it by the partition of the of big N. So we can show, can use this approach to show that this number really is the number of linearly independent wave functions, and there actually is such a state, provided that for each of the residue forms that I showed you, there's a wave function that produces that form when I take these multiple limits. So I can show that by constructing these wave functions, as I've shown here, which again is labeling particles by the position in terms of rows and columns in that partition I just showed you. And I won't go through the further details of this, but this has been carefully cooked up using also quasi-whole coordinates for each level, 1 through k. And it's been cooked up in particular so that it has the same degree in every particle coordinate. In the case where there are no quasi-holes, this just reduces to our ground state wave function that we had before. And the construction, I should say, owes a lot to work by Ardon, Kedem, and Stone, who, however, were really looking at the case of the plane. So finally, just before closing, I want to show you how this construction is related to some other recent work by some other people, which is a one-dimensional limit. So suppose we take the system on a sphere, on a torus or cylinder, and we take the k plus 1 body delta function interaction, and now we take the limit where the radius of the cylinder goes to 0. So in the what people usually call the Landau gauge basis of states, which are eigenstates under rotation, the wave functions are on these rings, and the separation is like 1 over the radius. So these are some orbitals which we can label in, think of as adjacent orbitals, along a effectively one-dimensional system when the radius goes to 0. And what these various people showed, some of them concentrating on k equals 2, is that as the radius goes to 0, if you want to have zero energy, what the rule is that on any pair of neighboring orbitals on this linear chain, the total number of particles on any on the two adjacent orbitals must be less than or equal to k. K plus 1 body occupation of these two is penalized. So if you like, you can draw pictures of this. I'm using open boundary conditions for the cylinder with a finite number of orbitals, which corresponds to the sphere, has the same topology as the sphere. So if you have the minimal number of flux where there are any solutions, then you have you must have a configuration like this. But if you add an extra orbital, which is like adding a flux quantum, then you have defects and you can start to move the particles around. Consistent, you see, with this rule that there are no more than 3 on any adjacent pair of orbitals. So clearly this is another combinatorial counting problem to just find the number of these configurations that obey the rule. And it turns out that this was solved by a Warnow, just for combinatorial reasons, I think, back in 1997. And the solution to this counting problem with n phi plus 1 orbitals gives exactly the same formula, or one side of it is exactly the same formula as the one I showed you just now. So this confirms again that, amazing as it may seem, taking this limit of the Hamiltonian, mapping onto this one-dimensional problem, you still have the same number of quasi-whole states, if you like, as in the original two-dimensional point of view. For the fermion case, what you do instead for big M is 1 is you can put up to k particles in k plus 2 adjacent orbitals. You can also generalize this to the torus. Okay, so to conclude, the prospects for states occurring at filling factors like 5 halves, 7 halves, and 12 fifths look bright. 13 fifths, it doesn't seem to have shown up in experiments so far, which is an indication that particle hole symmetry is not working very well in this particular case, presumably because lambda level mixing is important. Many of the properties of the states are under control. We can compute many things in terms of trial states, which are good, robust properties, universal properties of the phases. However, the adiabatic statistics calculation has still not been done or proven generally to be correct, and this is a kind of gap in the theory that needs to be filled. Okay, so thanks for your attention.
Showed the overlap as a function of V and delta V1, which makes connection to actual experimental systems. I have a very specific question, which will be easier to ask.
Let's see.
The one before that. The one where you showed the overlap.
Okay, fine.
Right. So each point on this, as I'm going along delta V1, represents a hypothetical real sample. Okay? I mean, that's just a fact. So what are you varying? Are you varying thickness? So when you say that it's a Coulomb calculation, so when your point...
That's an assertion, Shankar.
It's
not a fact. So zero
yes.
is the exact Hamiltonian that I stated. That is the Hamiltonian for the NS1 lambda level
right.
with a Fang-Stern parameter of W equals
yes, but what I'm
two.
Asking for, what sample?
Or even four.
What sample? Cases. That statement cannot be sample independent. Are you saying it's Fang-Stern for 5 million angstrom wide sample? What is the sample? That's what I'm asking.
So W, Ed, go ahead.
Yes. So this is for the actual Shia sample.
Yeah.
Right width and Frank-Stern variational parameter for calculating the matrix element of the one Frank-Stern Frank and Stern variational parameter for calculating one of our matrix element.
Well,
okay, for quantum well, you just use an infinite, you assume infinite confinement? So infinite confinement. So that's the point zero, that's the CR sample, yeah. And then you're varying delta V1
yes.
by adding it up.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you look at your work with Dmitry Green and also into the recent work by Dr. Oshikawa, in discussing degeneracy of states on torus, I mean, much of it seems to be determined by the boundary condition on the torus. Mm-hmm. And also there are additional ground state that comes into existence when you have, like, say, odd number of electrons as opposed to even number of electrons. Mm-hmm. I mean, considering k equals 3, that's this kind of feature still holds.
We don't have such a picture for k bigger than 2. One reason I wanted to get into looking at the quasar Hall wave functions and so on was to try to get more understanding along lines like that or anything else we could for k bigger than 2. But so far we don't have, as far as I know, no one has anything more than what I told you.
Okay, thank you.
Does the finite size numerics give some indication of the relative robustness of the k equals 2 and k equals 3 states, either from the observed gap or how finely tuned the interaction has to be to reach the non-abelian phase?
Okay, so some measure of the robustness is you know, the width of this region here. But also you asked about gaps, and if I can find a spectrum to show you again, I can make an important point. which is that so over here the gap is getting larger and larger, okay, and this is the hierarchy region. So somewhere probably way over here would be the parameters for the lowest lambda level, and the gap is quite big. However, in this region the gap is getting smaller and smaller, and there's the biggest trend in this data really is that all of these excited states are coming down much closer to the ground state as we hit the point where it turns into a crystal. And so in this region here, the gap is quite a lot smaller than the hierarchy state would be. It would be in the hierarchy state at the same density of particles. So it means that the gap in this 12-fifth state is going to be rather small.
Other questions? Let me throw out a more challenging one, Nick, perhaps, which is...
come on, throw me a softball.
Throw you a softball? Okay,
yeah.
Well, where do you think the open theoretical issues reside here, and you know, what direction do you see?
I pointed out one gaping hole, which is we need a general conceptual understanding of why, for the taking conformal blocks as trial wave functions, the adiabatic statistics agrees with the analytic continuation.
Argument for that, or a
well,
understanding?
It's not even that much of an understanding, but I think there's only one or two steps left. I think there are various pieces already floating around, which should basically do it in the end. But there's a couple of steps left, I think.
Current Simon theory doesn't come in there.
Well, but you see, deriving the adiabatic statistics is kind of like deriving the Chern-Simons theory as a low-energy effective theory. If you're prepared to start from that assumption, then of course you have no problem. But that's tantamount to assuming what you wanted to prove. Yeah, I've never went into that in great detail. But yes, I know.
Yeah, it'd be good to have similar derivations for some of the
others. No. It's just not known how to really compute the connection from the adiabatic transport when you have a complicated wave function. That's kind of an issue that I glossed over right at the beginning of the talk, which is that the transport should only depend on the homotopy class of the winding of these things. I think for that one can make some general, at least physical, argument based on the fact that in the limit where the length scales are much bigger than the correlation length of the system, it becomes independent of metric. And so apart from certain Aronoff Bohm phases, which do depend on the area enclosed, then it should be independent of the path.
Yeah, maybe last question.
Nick, getting back to the 5-half, where we all believe, I mean, I certainly do, that is the Moore-Reed state. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to be cynical and disbeliever, is there any alternate candidate? I mean, there basically isn't. Because, you know, experimental evidence is rather sparse, as you yourself pointed out in a very... Trenchant review article, which I enjoy very much, that spin polarization properties we do not know. Many things that we'd like to know, we do not know. And the main evidence is there is no other candidate state, and the numerical evidence is very good. Yep. Would you like to comment a little bit on, you know, what are alternative prospects which you want to rule out?
So if you have a state with an even denominator, such as 5-halves, it has to be some kind of paired state. Because if you like composite boson ways of thinking about things, you have to condense things in pairs to get a boson. So you're basically forced to have some kind of pairing in some sense. But then the issue seems to be, do you have strong pairing or weak pairing, and also the spin polarization. And what seems to happen is, you can have spin polarized strong pairing, but there's, it seems to be a perfectly possible phase in principle. As Bert Halperin realized a long time ago, really.
So you have to mix in lambda levels.
Well, I don't know how you would get it from a Hamiltonian, but what I was going to say is there's no nice trial wave function for that, actually, at least not in terms of particles. If you just assume charge two bosons, then it's just a nu is 1/8 Laughlin state for bosons. And for the case with spin singlet, we don't have a nice trial wave function, or not very nice, not a conformal block kind of thing, on either side of the transition between weak and strong pairing. So candidates exist in principle, and there may be some kind of descriptions of them, but they're not nearly as nice wave functions as these, and therefore these must be the right things.
No, I have always argued that by default it must be,
I don't think we're seeing phase separation. I think we can certainly exclude that if we want to argue about it. Well, I don't know. I don't know if we'd ever be able to rule out phase separation on a very large length scale based on, small, some finite size systems. But I don't think we're seeing any implication of possible phase separation.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you, Nick. And I guess there's a break now, and we'll be back here at 10:40.